So, how was your Black Friday? I know some of us slept in, dreaming about the leftovers we were going to have for lunch. Others were already at the mall waiting in line for that doorbuster deal, or doing their best as retail workers to be emotionally, spiritually, and physically ready for the busiest shopping season of the year. And some, like myself, were up early, sitting on our couches and scrolling through Amazon.com and other websites looking for deals. Now, I wasn't looking for anything specific. I was just using the internet to window shop, to see what's out there, which is one of my Black Friday traditions. And it was during that window shopping when I ended up on the website for Cards Against Humanity to see what they were up to. Now, Cards Against Humanity is a pretty simple game, and it's a bit like Mad Libs. A card is laid on the table, and it sometimes has a blank space in a sentence. Everyone looks at the cards that are in their hands to complete the sentence in the funniest way possible. And because this is a card game for adults, the results usually end up being very irreverent, dark, and odd. This isn't a family game night kind of game. It's a game to share with our closest friends, the ones with a sense of humor that matches our own. I was checking out their website because every year they do something odd on Black Friday. One year, they took down their entire website, so no one could buy anything. Last year, their website lets you give them $5 for nothing in return. This year, however, they made Black Friday a little more interactive. The company found a piece of land and rented a bulldozer, excavator, and dump truck. For every dollar people gave them, they would use that money to dig a giant hole and broadcast that digging online. The more money they got, the longer they would dig, and the deeper the hole would get. By donating money to this cause, people from around the world would literally be throwing their money away into a giant, pointless pit. And that's exactly what people did. Thousands of people gave the company money to dig that hole. When I first checked out the hole, they raised enough money to dig for 40 hours straight. When I left for church this morning, they were still there, digging that hole. Over and over again, the excavator would extend its shovel and scoop out some dirt. The dirt would be dumped into a truck, and the truck would dump that dirt onto a pile right next to the hole. This was a cycle of pointless digging, making a pointless hole bigger. So, why? Why dig? Why watch these machines do the same thing over and over and over again? Why should any of this continue? And that question, that why, is central, I think, to our gospel reading from Matthew today. Today's reading from Matthew is the same kind of reading we hear at the start of every new church year. Today we start Advent, these 4 Sundays until Christmas. We are on a journey to Jesus' birth, to the start of his public and earthly ministry, and we begin with words from the end of that ministry. Today's lesson comes right before Jesus is betrayed. He's about to be arrested, about to be tried, about to be executed by the ruling authorities. He's also about to be resurrected from the dead. Jesus' disciples, in just a few short days, are going to have their hearts broken, their expectations undone, and then see God do a brand new thing. Everything the disciples understand about their faith and about God are going to go on a roller coaster filled with the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. Jesus, as he continues in his mission, offers words of encouragement and hope. The disciples are going to wonder, in the face of so much violence and joy, how they will continue. So Jesus tells them to look forward, to see the next chapter God is writing, a chapter of peace, hope, and love that the disciples fully expect to see in their lifetime. But that chapter didn't fully come when those disciples expected it. Scholars believe the gospel according to Matthew was written sometime in the mid-80s, possibly in Galilee where Jesus grew up, or maybe in Syria. Matthew is part of a community that has told stories about God and Jesus for decades. Members of his community saw Jesus and were taught by Peter, Paul, James, and the rest of those early apostles. But by the mid-80s, 50 years after Jesus' death and resurrection, that kind of firsthand experience is coming to an end. The original apostles were no longer there. The people who first heard the story of Jesus are old or long gone. For 50 years, this community waited for the next chapter of God's story to be written. For 50 years, they held out hope that they would see and experience Jesus like those early followers did. They went to church. They worshiped. They said their prayers and shared Jesus with their children and their friends. And for 50 years, they lived in hope that the day in and day out monotonous parts of life would soon be over, and God's kingdom of justice, mercy, and love would finally come. These second and third generation of followers of Jesus didn't need at first to ask the question, why? With so much firsthand knowledge of Jesus around them, the stories they heard were still fresh, still exciting, and still pointed to the day when Jesus would come. But after 50 years, and after the first generation of followers started to die out, the question of why came up. Why do we keep gathering together if Jesus isn't back yet? Why go to church, teach our kids, and love our neighbors as ourselves if we don't know when Jesus will return? Why keep welcoming the stranger, taking care of all different kinds of people, and keep trying to end poverty and bring a sense of wholeness to this world? Why keep living lives that embody the vision of justice, peace, and love that God is bringing about? If we experience our lives like we're just digging a hole over and over again, why, when it comes to this faith in Jesus stuff, should we continue? Some scholars speculate that the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John exist because of these kinds of questions. When the early communities of faith asked why, that's when the good news of Jesus was collected, written down, and shared. when these communities wondered why they should continue. Jesus' ministry, his teaching, his words, his healings and action were written down to be told and re-experienced. The Gospels were never meant to only be a historical record of what Jesus did. They were written as an experience to reveal Jesus in an embodied and very full way. In the face of why, the early faith communities didn't try to explain that question away. They didn't try to pretend the doubt wasn't there. They instead did what they always did. They just gave Jesus. They kept sharing their faith. They kept loving each other and the world because the answer to why continue is always Jesus. We continue because Jesus lives. We keep going because Jesus calls each of us by name. We believe because in our baptism, the waters did more than just wash over us. The waters brought us into a relationship with the Creator of the world and with God's people. The people sitting in this church, in other congregations, and with everyone who came before us and with everyone who will come after. We continue because our imperfect faith and our doubt are never bigger than the love that God is never bigger than the love that God has for us. In the routine of life, when everything feels pointless, like we're just digging a hole to nowhere, Jesus is there. Jesus is present. And with Jesus, everything changes. Amen.